Hey, Better Product listeners, we're doing something a little different today. As a bonus, over the next few weeks, we will be resharing past interviews with speakers who will be presenting at our Better Product Speaker Series. If you haven't heard the plug, this five-week speaker series will be bringing you into the room with industry-leading product professionals to hear countless product insights. If you haven't signed up yet, be sure to grab your spot. You can register by going to betterproduct.community/speaker-series. And if that's too long of a link to remember, just go to our community site to get connected.
You tell a story first, they fall in love with you, and then the product delivers.
Are we recording?
Oh my God, sorry.
Better Product, the only show that takes a behind-the-scenes look into how digital products are created,
the business is built around them, and how you too can innovate better product. I'm Christian.
I'm Anna.
Welcome to today's show.
Does product lead marketing or does marketing lead product?
On today's show, we sit down with Kyle Lacey to discuss the answer to this very question. Now, whether you know Kyle or not, a quick search will pull up his accolades. He's written books. He's an international speaker. He's truly a marketing thought leader. In 2017, he took on the opportunity to join Lessonly, a software company in Indianapolis, as their first VP of marketing.
And outside of exploring this question, does product lead marketing or does marketing lead product? We'll learn how Kyle launched a user conference that didn't feel like a user conference, a conference that he ultimately didn't get to attend as his wife ended up having their second baby a bit earlier than anticipated. He also shares with us how they doubled down on their brand messaging while making sure the company never lost the voice of its founder, Max Yoder.
The vision for Lessonly from the very beginning was we help people do better work so they can live better lives.
So for him, it was about taking the company to the next level by telling the Lessonly story. Hear how they focused on taking an internal conversation and made it external.
It was more about taking the story and putting more of a foundation around it. So it was, how do we take everything we talk about internally, make it external so everybody truly understood what Lessonly is all about?
When you think about taking on a new opportunity and a new role, often people in leadership positions will come in thinking they need to make their mark, make a huge impact. They think that kind of starting, they have to have it all figured out. But in fact, Kyle shows that he spent his first month just kind of observing what was going on.
He didn't come in with an agenda. He didn't come in with a one-year strategy plan. He started with a really simple objective. Just listen and learn.
I'm not a huge fan of the idea of having a strategy that you implement in a high-growth software company, because the things we talked about at the beginning of the quarter changed dramatically throughout the quarter based off of growth, because you are growing so fast and you're bringing on customers at such a rapid pace. So right or wrong, I've never had a core strategy that I've implemented. It's been, here's what we need to accomplish in 6 to 12 months. Here's what we need to do to get to that point in the 3 months we have ahead of us. And then we change it along the way.
Looking at that, so in this, you said in 6 to 12 months, you kind of have an idea of what you want to happen. What were some of those things in your first year in 2017?
First one was have a conference.
So what drove that, the having a conference? What was the...
They had been talking about it. It was mostly just taking the risk to do it. And I'm a fan of just do, like, if you think it's a good idea and it somewhat aligns to strategy, then do it. The conference made sense to me. It was a good way to put a stake in the ground to say we're serious and we want to make it different than everybody else that's doing just another user conference. There was that. There was the doubling down on our brand and the voice of our brand and making sure that we spent as much time as possible getting what Max portrays in the market into us as Lessonly as much as possible. Because if we lose his voice throughout the product and throughout the market, then we lose, in my opinion.
What's in a user conference that makes it a useful marketing tool for companies?
What makes a conference valuable to a company is the face-to-face interaction between the customer, the prospect, and the company. It's a good way to get everybody in the same room. And we just took a different approach to the way that, you know, we didn't spend a ton of money on a speaker. We had some really cool speakers that delivered impact. And then we had a lot of practitioners that did breakout sessions. And it was really just about the relationship and making sure that we could get across our do better work message
Why was it so important for it to be different?
Because Lessonly is different.
Okay.
We just have a different approach to business. I mean, my first couple months with Max, who's my boss, was about talking about appreciative inquiry and nonviolent communication. Like, it's just not normal. I wish it was in a lot of companies. I mean, it's just the way he approaches things is the ethos of Lessonly.
What worked about Yellowship last year that you want to bring forward to the next conference? And conversely, what are some things that you're hoping to improve upon?
You know, improving upon the conference is going to be about creating new experiences. We actually lucked out that we didn't have many complaints other than I think the chairs were uncomfortable for people. Like, that was it. So it's more about how do you expand upon the experience so it's different than other conferences? How do you make sure that the product offering that you are showing at the conference isn't like a full-blown product demo? Because we don't want this to just be another user conference where you're talking about, here's what we built and we're going to build in 6 months and blah, blah, blah. Like, I want it to be an experience and not just, we're going to go sit and listen to somebody talk about a product.
How do you experience a product without sitting through a product
demo? So we did it at our last conference by building it into the Do Better Work methodology. So there's six pillars to it, and we showed six different product offerings that we had built or were building that apply to the Do Better Work methodology. So the Do Better Work platform. And that got us away from like just demoing something and getting your product person up there and doing it. So, and just one thing to make clear on the Yellowship, we do think about it as a conference, which is why it does help us keep the product from being front and center. I mean, we had 380 people attend over the 3 days, and we had 400 something customers. You know, we're shooting for 500 in October, next October. We want it to be a conversation about how people can do better work, because we work, that's what we do, right? Most of us, we work all the time, right? It's most of our day is working. So why not have the conversation about how you can make work more enjoyable for people?
I think it's super interesting. You mentioned the brand, the Yellowship brand, and how it's not a product conference. It's a conference. Like, it's not a user conference, like you said. So how did that affect how the brand execution of Yellowship?
I mean, yellow is our brand color. We wanted movement to be involved in the conference. Yellowship is easy to say. We actually liked saying it. The URL was open.
It's always important.
Yeah. It was just a different way to brand a conference.
Any challenges that you didn't anticipate with the conference?
Our biggest thing was just making sure that the story was told in a way that made sense to everyone. We'd spent a lot of time and energy trying to build that story. How do you fit the product into that story? How do you fit the soft skill Do Better Work side to the actual tactical side of doing better work and the platform? And that was the hardest part. And I didn't necessarily see, I knew it was going to be hard to do that, but it was harder than I thought.
How so?
It is difficult to try to get a bunch of people in a room and tell a story in a unique way that Max feels confident delivering and that all of us are behind.
And what did you do after the conference? How do you ensure that everything you've done there, that you're sort of leveraging or carrying the momentum through on the marketing side for the product?
So the most important part about leveraging momentum at a conference and at Yellowship in particular is to make sure that the Do Better Work message is being now applied through everything. Onboarding through customers, the product, our messaging to the market moving forward. We put together a Do Better Work committee internally at Lessonly that has leaders from each team that meets on a biweekly basis to kind of do quarterly projects on how they get the Do Better Work idea internally into Lessonly as well as externally in the market.
Where did Do Better Work, the actual words, come from?
It's the mission statement that Max wrote 5 years ago when he started the company.
So when you came on, it must have existed.
No, it didn't. We actually went through a couple different ideas of how to bring the message of Lessonly to the market. The first one I came up with was the knowledge divide, which was like, the fastest performing teams in the world compared to the normal businesses and what the gap is. And we believe the gap is continuous training, which
that sounds like a great book title too.
Yeah, it was great. Except like it just fell flat with everyone, right? Everybody, pitch decks. And then,
sorry, in that case, when you say everybody, was it ever tested externally? Or
yeah,
you
we had it. We had pitch decks. Max did it at a couple conferences. I did it at a couple conferences. And I think the messaging was good, but the knowledge divide just did not fit with lesson leading.
The way that I kind of look at this conference too, it's almost as if it's like the launch party for a new messaging.
New messaging. And I think any software company and a product like any company, especially software, you either do high level messaging that captures imaginations of a lot of people, or you try to create a category. It's not something that we wanted to pursue because we serve so many different types of people, sales enablement, customer service training, learning and development, that we wanted to go more broad. So it's a different strategy.
How do you feel like that is an advantage and maybe in some ways a disadvantage?
I don't know how it's an advantage yet. It's definitely a disadvantage, which we are constantly looking at. We kind of bridge that gap with review sites like G2 Crowd and Trust Radius, where it's more about the customer reviews than it is an analyst's opinion on where you fit in a quadrant. It's definitely, I think as we start expanding as a company and moving into larger deals and upper market, like that's, we definitely are looking at categories. We just don't know. So we're trying to bet on something that we believe is true right now and evolve that as the market changes.
You mentioned the website overhaul, and I think you said you call it simplifying the brand, simplifying the message. And then you also mentioned you guys really were very B2C inspired as opposed to looking at other B2B websites, which you did as well. So I guess tell us a little bit about that.
We spend so much time as consumers in our daily lives that we do not apply them to marketing tactics in our day-to-day as B2B marketers. Like if you go to a lot of the largest B2B marketing sites in the world, like software companies, they're just a mess.
Why do you think that is?
They have a lot of product. They have a lot of people. It's harder and harder to simplify as you get bigger. But for us, it was, you know, one of our tenets as a marketing team is, obsess over the experience. So obsess over the prospect experience. If they come to the website and they have no idea how to get in front of a salesperson to make a buy, you've missed it, right? So I give a lot of credit to Mitch Causey, who's our director of marketing, but he said we should remove all forms and only do one CTA, which was get a demo. And that way you're opening up all of our content to more eyeballs. It's free for everyone. And if they want to get a demo, they get a demo. And we looked at, like you said, we looked at a lot of consumer sites. We looked at some of the top, what we thought were the top B2B software sites, and realized that simplifying the messaging, simplifying the UI, simplifying everything about the website was the most important thing we could do.
What do you mean by simplifying?
Like not having 60 forms, because somebody that downloads a template for a training guide, that does not mean they want to buy training software. It just means that they need a guide for training.
So what do you think drove the decision to gate the content to begin with?
Leads. Having more volume of leads is better. It took a lot of energy for us just to say we're okay with getting less leads. But what we found is that we're actually getting more than what we thought, and they're more qualified.
Why did you say that it took more energy to get more leads?
Because you're seeing leads go up, but that's great because it makes you feel great. But then if conversion is going down, like who cares about the volume of leads you're getting? So we just thought, let's simplify our idea of a lead, which is a demo, and all the demos we get are qualified. And that allows our inbound team to work more effectively because they don't have to process through all the crap that we're getting before. And it allows our sales team to believe in inbound again because they're more qualified leads. But at the core of it, it was how do we make the experience as simple as possible? Like it's amazing that marketers and product market, like everyone that we think that just because somebody's filled out a form, they want to buy it. And I fully admit that I was that type of marketer and I had to be pulled around, but it works because it's working for us.
It's interesting because earlier you were talking about, up leveling and going up market, larger clients, getting more clients and broadening, and you're a B2B SaaS company, I think a lot of times we meet B2B SaaS companies, they typically think business speak, feature first, talking in that sort of way. But you're saying when you rebranded, when you're up-leveling, you're getting back to some of the brand voice that's more honest. How do those two worlds collide? Because it seems a little bit against what there's conventional wisdom around in the B2B world.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to consumer. I mean, think about if you're searching for a flight, you have how many options to try to find a flight? A ton of options. Brand plays into that. It's the same thing with software. It is a feature does not sell software anymore. There's just way too many competitors. The market is wide open. It's your ability to tell a story that delivers a different value to somebody than just a feature set. People ultimately want to work with people they enjoy. With today's software world, you can buy from anybody you want. But that's the value of brand. It's if you can tell a story differently, they're going to listen to you. And we just happen to be able to tell a story differently in a way that works. Now, from a feature standpoint, you have to continue to work to be on par with your competitors so you don't lose the feature battle after you get the lead. And B2B software companies sometimes think the exact opposite. They're like, well, we're going to sell our feature and then hopefully we get the deal through the sales process. We're saying you tell a story first, they fall in love with you, and then the product delivers on the values that you're trying to sell through the top of funnel.
How do you continue that story into the product?
The hardest part about including the messaging within the product is the question you have to answer: does product live in front of the message, or does the message live in front of product? So is marketing tailing product releases, or is marketing out front of product releases before they're delivered? Which is a very, very different, they're two very, very different strategies. We tend to go about the idea that if we understand the market correctly, we are a product-led company where product is out front of the needs of the customer and marketing is delivering on the messaging in one holistic approach. A lot of people just talk about, here's the product we're going to build and it's not built for 12 months. And that is not product-led, that's marketing-led, which I think it has worked in the past and does not work anymore.
So your experience, when do you recommend a company should start thinking about product marketing?
It's really dependent on how the software company was built. For me, it's more around your middle of your Series A, Series B raise when you start investing in product marketing talent. And that's because you're getting to the point where you found product market fit, meaning that it's repeatable and it's scalable. And now it's about truly understanding competitive set, win-loss reviews, understanding what the market needs from a customer standpoint, which could live between product management and product marketing. And it's also doubling down on new industries or new verticals or segments that you might not have thought about before because you're starting to find repeatability in the process.
What was Lessonly like when you came on?
We had a targeted approach to go to market. We had an outbound sales team. It was about reaching out to people to get them interested in the product and to sell the product. And the way you go to market in that way is much different than if I was at a Typeform or a MailChimp where it's about volume, where somebody can do a free trial, they can start using the product, you have automated onboarding and everything. And Lessonly, it's more hands-on. The CX team is much more involved because that's our strategy from the very beginning. And it's just a different approach to marketing. Like you spend way more money on organic and Google AdWords from a product-led company because it's cheaper than like spending money in an outbound sales team.
Have you found in your time at Lessonly, has product marketing impacted other internal groups, way the product is sold, how the product is built?
So product marketing is involved in all of our win-loss reviews. So that has impact for the sales team. Product marketing is responsible for a lot of the product enablement. So that means we use Lessonly as a software to enable our sales and CX team on our roadmap. So here's how you talk about our Zendesk integration. Here's how you talk about our practice features that are launching. Here's how you talk about X, Y, and Z. And then product marketing from a competitive standpoint, like we keep our Lessonly lessons up to date on a competitive standpoint so that, you know, if a salesperson is dealing with a competitor, they can go to Lessonly and take the competitive lesson to make sure they fully understand why we beat them. You know, it's like a battle card for us. So it touches a lot of different, pretty much all parts of the org, and it will only get more ingrained as we grow and we add more people.
So as you scale, looking towards the future, what are the what does that look like for Lesson Leads?
For us, it is, you know, it really is doubling down on what we have done. It is fully understanding if product marketing will get more robust as we enter new markets like the UK. Like, I'm not saying this is going to happen in the next year, but as we open up new markets like APAC and UK, I mean, it's just a normal thing. Canada, as you grow, you know, that's going to open up new competitive sets. It's going to open up new niche players that we might not have seen before. From a product standpoint, as we move into larger deals, which we will continue to do, the product landscape changes dramatically because you have needs that you didn't know existed because they're huge organizations. And I think product marketing being involved in that's important to fully understand the enterprise buyer is a completely different thing than what we're dealing with right now, which we continue to work on. And then we're doing another up-leveling of the brand to invest in getting Max and Connor out more in front of people and speaking in the book and really trying to own the conversation around how do you help employees enjoy what they do and do better work. It's funny that we, as people, admire musicians and athletes, and we even practice. Like, I run. I practice running because I run races, right? And we don't do that at work most of the time. It's really interesting that salespeople don't practice, customer service people don't practice. And at Lesson Leads, we believe that practice is actually the most important part about training. And that's kind of what we're doubling down on in 2019.
So what does better product mean to you?
Better product meets the need of the customer better than it did before in ways that only the customer could tell you. And it's really customer-led type product development because your customer is your best salesperson. And if you can deliver a better product to the customer than what they bought, they will stay with you. And in the software world, retention is everything.
That was Kyle Lacy, VP of Marketing at Lesson Leads. The best place to learn about Lesson Leads is lessonleads.com. And the best place to learn about their user conference, which is coming back October 2019, is lessonleads.com/yellowship. And of course, the best place to learn about Kyle Lacy is on LinkedIn.
Christian and I sat down and wanted to rehash some of the things that he said. He made a lot of really good points, and we wanted to kind of hit those home. So enjoy us discussing these things.
The first thing that resonated with me was, obviously, we knew here locally in Indy, we knew about the Yellowship Conference, but when he was talking and he was tying it to the messaging of do better work, it really struck me how to pull something like that off, you have to have a strong brand, because he wanted to make a user conference that wasn't like a user conference. Right. And that came through. When Yellowship came out, I don't know that I even knew that it was Lesson Leads to begin with. It just looked like a great conference. But to pull that off, to be genuine, you have to have developed an honest brand. And I think brand ties into something like that really strongly.
I think it speaks that the honesty of the brand like trickles down from the honesty that like the authenticity of Max as their CEO.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Totally. And I think when you read about startups that have a founder that has a distinct vision, really the growth of the startup is almost, the success kind of is determined by how well you can scale that vision down throughout the company. And what's interesting with Kyle is he wasn't there from the beginning. He came in a few years after Lesson Leads had started. He's been there for a couple years, and he got what Max was trying to do and could execute on that. But I think that's part of being honest, is like a lot of the keys to your product's messaging, even when you scale to new markets, is really rooted in what it was to begin with and just finding new ways to tell it, new stories to tell. And I think that's kind of what Yellowship was. It was almost like a package around the vision that they'd always had, but buttoned up and more formalized.
Something else that was really interesting about that too is how they are doing things a bit differently. So like a lot of B2B SaaS companies, big sales teams going out, you know, direct to customer kind of selling, and they're leaning so heavily on their brand. And he, you know, I think what he said was so interesting about the idea that you can't, if you're going to compete on features, you're not going to win. Everyone's got the same features, but you have to build that brand that people are going to fall in love with. Like, they're going to fall in love with your story, and that's, and those are the people who are going to want to do business with you.
I think when he said that comment about good product will sell itself, I had the same sort of skepticism, thinking, well, I don't know if that's true. But I think what he meant is not that you just make a good product and you just put it on the internet and everybody's just going to buy it. It was more that good product will sell itself, meaning look at the product. All the things that you need to sell this and market this should be reflected in the product. One of the things that I think a lot of B2B companies struggle with, and I think it's kind of old school mentality, is we build features and products for large customers.
That's even how a lot of the software in this town was built, right? It was vaporware, and they built it to the first couple of people who would buy software.
All large contract driven, and then over time, you keep building these, and you make good money that way, but eventually your product becomes kind of unstable and unsustainable. So they have the six pillars driving the product. So it's not as if they'll just do anything in the product to kind of, you know, customize it for a new client. It still has to roll up into something larger, which makes it a lot easier for them to tell their story through the product. Whereas a lot of B2B companies, if you continue to create customizations for clients over time, you're left after a few years with something that just doesn't look like anything.
We didn't get much into this with him, but the way that the product marketing and the product management sides of the house are so integrated. And the idea that when customer requests come in, they kind of bucket them into, the buckets are ready and they fall into a pillar of, you know, what pillar of do better work does this request fall into? And then of course, what team builds it, because each team is responsible for a different pillar. And I think that it probably is another way maybe they keep from doing that such deep customization is they almost like they have their roadmap themes preset in a way.
Right. And he mentioned switching over to sort of agile marketing, which you hear more and more about, but still not a lot of people practice it. That allows his team to be just as flexible. Like when he joked about not having a strategy. I think it was a joke. I don't know. He might be serious, but he seems to be succeeding. So if he doesn't have a strategy, then maybe this is a new way of doing things.
And he had this great quote. They're concerned about what's true right now, and then they adapt as things change, which I think is a generally agile lesson that, I mean, we can all take and apply.
So the B2C, I can't remember if we talked about it or if we were talking about it afterwards about there's this idea that in the B2B world, you have to like, everybody has to talk like in features and capabilities. And it's almost as if you were to personify a brand voice for B2B, it's like somebody's wearing a suit or a power suit or whatever they call it. That's almost like the traditional logic, I guess, if a tradition existed in B2B.
Like professional trust.
But now, lessonly's taken, and it's not unprofessional, but it's very personable. It's very direct to what they're talking about. Yellowship is very almost charitable in what they're trying to do for people. And it all comes through. So they're creating a brand that I think we would see with B2C. When you think about, I don't know, Casper mattresses or a lot of this Warby Parker, a lot of this space getting taken over by brands that are speaking directly to consumers.
Yeah. And I think another good example of kind of what they're similar to what they're doing is MailChimp. I mean, MailChimp has a really playful, fun brand, and it's a B2B product. I think people can use it.
Email marketing is also highly competitive and like it's really well established. So the only way MailChimp's really been able to succeed is through a strong brand and a brand voice coming through. And I think Lessonly is probably ahead of the curve in their industry, which we don't know all the competitors there, but I would venture to say that there's nothing wrong with establishing that brand now, because ultimately over time, and as we see with technology, it moves so fast that you have to find something that actually competes when everybody's doing the same thing.
I mean, that's what Kyle said, right? I mean, if you go to feature comparison with them, you know, you might lose, but if they love you and if they love your brand, and then they'll want to do business with you. Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.